Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to Slam Fire Radio, episode 33 for November 28th, 2013. I am one of your hosts, Trevor the Frolatte.
I'm Matthew the Warning Shot McClatchy.
And I'm Owen Swelling.
The LARPer.
No, the Prepping Warrior. Dude, you call him LARPer one more time and he's going to make you leak.
That's fine. He had a chance to say the warrior line. He didn't.
LARPer jumps in, huh?
Can't I be just normal for 1 week?
I tried that once. And I was like, toe the line. You're the Frolatte. No, you can't. Normal. There ain't nothing normal about us or this show.
I tried being normal once. It was horrible.
And then you stopped taking the pills. All right. So on this week's show, we have a great interview with president of the Canadian National Sporting Clays Association, Jason Philp, a buddy of mine from Calgary who bought me chicken wings once.
It's all you got to do to become a buddy of Trevor's is buy him chicken wings once and you're in for life. You'll even get on the Christmas card list.
And if you buy me bacon, you're in the will. I mean, right?
That's whoa. So that means I'm in the will?
You were in.
Because I brought two packages of bacon at the three gun.
That didn't count because that was the admission fee. Everybody.
That was the admission fee.
Everybody's like, Trevor.
Well, I didn't even get to eat any of that bacon, you realize.
That's because it was the admission fee. I stored it.
Wow.
You got to store your bacon. Everybody's like, so we're coming to your house. There's like nine of us. What can we do to help? I'm like, just everybody needs to bring a pound of bacon. And almost everybody did. So let's jump right into it, guys. Let's start with the Warrior. What did you do this week in guns, man?
Not a whole lot. Just about, I think the only thing I actually did was bought a new AR upper and lower.
That counts for a lot of stuff, man. I'm just saying, when you say not much, then you say, oh, by the way, I bought an upper and a lower. I mean, that's something. Come on.
Buying AR-15 rifle parts is always good for...
That's a pass.
Always a pass.
Yeah. Yeah. So what model? We know what model, but what brand?
I got, SFRC had some of those.
Trevor knows exactly what you're talking about now.
I do know exactly what he's talking about. Paul Furlott sent me a text saying, not Paul Furlott, Jason Burns. It was like, Trevor, you built like three or four ARs already. SFRC has matched upper and lowers on sale for $249 for this set. Like that dude, that's $100 less than I paid for an upper and lower from Stag.
Oh yeah, no, I saw it and I was like, okay, that's a good deal.
So some
people pay that for half, yeah. Because I do know that the NEA I have now, the lower, is out of spec, the Magwell. So I was kind of, that's kind of what I was looking at.
Are you sure it's out of spec or is it just a feature?
No.
Yeah.
You wiggle your gun and the mag falls out. Come on.
It's an automatic mag drop feature.
That's not the automatic feature we want on a modern day sporting rifle.
That's right. There's another automatic feature we'd much rather have.
Indeed. Yeah.
So they were matching, I don't know what they call it, matched upper lowers that were duplicate serial numbers.
With a Z on them.
So they added a Z to...
For zombie!
The end of it, that's right.
They keep doing this. They've had color blems numerous times, and then I heard through industry insiders that the dude that was in charge of the anodizing got fired because they got tired of giving away uppers and lowers that weren't anodized correctly. This is the second run where they've done a Z on the end of a serial number.
Huh. Yeah.
I wonder if it's just an opportunity, you know, I don't know. I mean,
well, I'm sure they've got this stuff and this, I mean, who knows when this happened and they're just like, well, we might as well get something out of them.
Right, but how many times are you going to keep making the same mistakes over? Color blems.
Oh, that's true.
Duplicate serial numbers.
Oh, whatever. It doesn't matter. We're getting good deals on AR parts.
We're benefiting.
Yeah, it benefits everybody except, well, even them. They're selling more stuff and getting their name out there.
Well, they sure are.
So,
and I mean, the stuff they're putting out is, they got, you know, some flack in the beginning, and Owen's lower, you know, his upper and his lower are loose, and his Magwell's not spec, and then you've got my NEA. I'll put it up against anything. I had a Daniel Defense here in the house, and looking at the two rifles, I take my NEA over that Daniel Defense any day. It was smoother, it was fit, the finish was great. The upper and lower were so tight, you had to pound the pins out.
Yeah. Mine, you still got to pound the pins out of mine.
For different reasons.
Yeah.
Sorry, Owen. Carry on, please.
No, anyway, so I I just said, well, I'm going to get those. So I got those, and I'll just, I think what I'm going to do is basically strip what I have now, transfer everything over to those, and then I'll use my stripped upper and lower as a second build.
But your lower magwell is at a spec, so you're going to use that.
It is. You could jerry-rig fix that by putting some tape on the inside of the magwell or something.
That's true. Right? It's some of that expanding foam. Just spray that in there and then carve out what you don't need.
It also, I mean, for a second AR, you could, and it's not every single mag that has a problem either. So
right.
But yeah, you can. I mean, it'll work for that. Just to have a second AR for. My wife or
where's
something
my wallet?
Like that.
Where's my wallet? They are 214 and they have 47 left. I'm pulling the trigger. I'm going.
You're getting another one.
You don't need another one, Trevor.
What do you mean? I like building them and selling.
Well, that's fun too, but do you ever come out ahead doing that? Hey, I just had a killer barrel you could have had. Hey,
dude, for somebody who's not a cop, you ask a lot of questions.
I thought they were 214. They must have been 250 shipped or something.
Maybe so. Or maybe Jason Burns just can't read. I don't know. Anyway, yes. Carry on while I buy this.
Well, that's pretty much it. I bought those, and I will need to get oh, my goodness, what's it called?
A thingamajigger.
This is awful. Forward assist. That's what it is.
I have one.
You do? Sold.
Wait. These are stripped. Sorry. I don't have one.
He needs it.
when I was doing my build, I bought an upper parts kit from Brownells, and then when I bought the upper from Arms East that sells Stag to match the lower I got from the Stag lower I got from Arms East, it actually did come from the factory with the dust cover and the forward assist in it. So up until 30 seconds ago, I did have one.
Okay. Yeah.
But then you bought another upper and lower.
Original AR was a slab side, so it didn't have the forward assist.
Well, you don't need to put a forward assist in there. It'll still run without it.
I realize that, but I'll put one in just because.
Yeah, you might as well. Hey, I actually use mine. I know they say you're not supposed to, but I don't use it for that reason. I use it whenever I do a press check.
Yeah.
I slightly pull out the bolt, and I verify there's a round in the chamber, and then I just smack the forward assist to verify that the bolt is seated again.
Same thing.
It's part of the military manual of arms.
Yeah?
I didn't even
realize that. I just did it because I figured it made sense.
Well,
when you put that bolt forward, if it's locked back and you're releasing it, obviously it slams forward then, but even then they still do it. They still
smack it to be safe, yeah.
Yeah, they still hit the forward assist. I probably wouldn't do it closing.
No, I don't do it then. If I let the bolt go forward on its own inertia, I don't do it then. But if I do a press check, I know that the bolt, you know, it didn't slam home, so I want to verify.
Yes, absolutely.
When I do it, if I had a stoppage during the regular running of the firearm, then I may not do it because I know I've got a problem.
And right, exactly, yeah.
Indication it's time to clean.
Yep.
But if I let the charging handle go forward slowly for some reason or I'm doing something like that and the round doesn't chamber, I absolutely use it. What would you do if you didn't have it? You'd have to eject the round,
pop a new one in.
Let it go. Yeah, this is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, no, I understand in a malfunction. I believe jam is the correct word there, Trevor, not stoppage. I don't know what the stoppage is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bolivar, he thinks he knows about these things?
You'd think so, but it's clearly jam. Because if you put jam in your AR, it stops. Also known as a jam.
Bacon, egg, the whole toast, whatever.
Anyway, back to my original point. Yeah, if you have a stoppage, you got a problem. Don't use your forward assist. But if you, you know, it does come in handy for other things. So yeah, Owen, I would get one.
Yep. Indeed. Cool. So yeah, so that's me.
Cool. That brings us to Trevor. What'd you do, man?
Trevor's busy ordering.
Besides buying an upper and lower.
Yeah, why don't you go?
All right, I'll go. So I went hunting with Trevor. And then I went hunting with Matt, and well, I was just as successful both times.
And by just as, you mean not.
Yeah, it's funny. In the show notes, I've actually got hunting in quotes because it was...
Me too.
I have hunting, sort of.
Yeah, hunting, sort of.
So anyway, since I went first, I get to tell the primer story now.
Yep.
So Trevor and I, after we were done quote-unquote hunting, we went to Canadian Tire just because they have guns at his Canadian Tire there in Campbelltown, and we thought we'd poke around and see what And so he sees primers. And we went in. I mean, this is right after hunting, so we still had our hunting stuff on. So he buys primers, and of course they put it in the little, you know, steel-proof bag that, you know, only takes a sharp flick of the finger to break the seal on. But anyway, you know, so that nothing bad happens as he walks to the front to pay for it. Meanwhile, we're in our hunting vests that have live ammo in the pockets that we had brought in from being outside hunting. So I was like, ooh, real safe. I feel more secure all the time. How about you, Trevor?
Yeah, I'm standing in line, and just as the lady opens the security bag and takes the dangerous primers out, Matthew hands me a live round of 20 gauge. Don't you feel safe that they locked up those primers, he says.
But anyway, while we were there, I did get to handle one of those little new, what are they, Kiappa Little Badger, whatever it's called. It's this little folding in half, single shot 22. Don't like it. It's a lot smaller than I thought it was, and you get the cheek weld is just, there is no cheek weld. It's like a cheek bone weld. Like, you can't get your face low enough to see through the sight, so didn't fit me at all. So I'm glad I didn't buy that when I saw it online a while ago. Thanks for muting your mic before you left there, bud. Anyhow.
Sorry.
So anyway, besides that, the reason I went to Trevor's was to swap the barrel on my AR. So the 11.5-inch Green Mountain barrel is gone. In fact, it has already sold. And Trevor's STI 16.5-inch barrel that he sold me is now on. And what a difference. From 16 MOA to just a hair over 2 MOA. Way, way better. It's a huge improvement. I had it at the range today. I didn't want to walk all the way to 100, so I set it at 50. But just over an inch at 50 yards, 5 shots. Works really well. Remember I was telling you guys before it had this weird trigger kick? Like when I pulled the trigger would kick back so hard that it would hurt my finger? Yeah. Gone. Doesn't do that anymore. So I don't know if that was just a function of the shorter barrel. There was more pressure in the gas system because the hole is up closer, and it
I
was
think
doing.
You totally had something wrong with the gas system.
There was something messed up because also now the bolt locks back properly on an empty mag, whereas before very few mags it would actually lock back on.
That's very interesting.
So it actually fires and operates and functions like a real AR now. I'm very happy with it. I went from this gun that I just threw into storage and left it there until a 3-gun came along to it's on my lap right now. Like, I can't go anywhere without it. It's like, ooh, it shoots straight now. Now it's interesting. So I'm loving it.
I wonder if dwell time was a factor there, recoil impulse with that short barrel.
There's all kinds of stuff that could be messing it up.
You've got to look at your buffer spring. You've got to look at your buffer weight.
Yep. Yeah, I wonder if there was a bunch of tuning that I just have no idea exists that could have been done that I didn't know about.
Because I had sent an email to the gun doc on the Politics and Guns show, Joe Chetwood, who builds ARs and AR-10s. They do a segment on there where they answer questions. So I was going from the barrel that you now have to the longer 18-inch barrel, and I was ordering a buffer.
Yep.
And I knew that I would have more powder burned and longer dwell time. Well, would I have longer dwell time? Would I, you know, I was going to a rifle-length barrel, a rifle-length gas tube. Did I need a lighter or heavier buffer? I didn't know. Did I need a heavier spring or a lighter spring? I didn't know. I didn't know if it mattered, right?
Did they answer?
Yes, they did. My question to Joe was, if I'm going to a longer barrel, do I need to go to a heavier buffer, a standard buffer, or a lightweight buffer? And basically it was, well, if it works well with a standard weight buffer, no. If you start to have some issues and you're not getting enough gas or you're getting too much gas, then you'll start to play with your the weight of your buffer.
Oh, okay. So it's not really a set in stone kind of
no, there is
scientific
no formula
thing.
Per se, as yeah. far as I could tell from his explanation, unless I missed something.
Right.
That's and you know I really want that. I want somebody to say to me, "Well, yeah, if you're 14 inches and less on your barrel, then you obviously need a heavier or lighter." Yep. No, it doesn't work like that apparently.
No. That's too bad.
Yeah.
Oh well, bit of black magic in the black rifles.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, the only other thing I did was play with Trevor's 22 kit. Anytime I got it to feed reliably, it now shoots reliably. So it's back together. I just hope you have ammo that works in it. I only have two different types of ammo here at the house: Dyna Points and then Winchester Bulk Pack, the 555 stuff. The Dyna Points feed absolutely perfectly, but they don't have enough power to cycle the bolt properly. So I just had my hammer not cocking back every now and then. And the 555 bulk pack ammo has way, you know, tons of power, but doesn't feed well in my rifle anyway. So I was either getting failures to feed or failure to cock back.
So you were saying that in some cases the hammer wasn't cocking.
Yeah, the hammer wasn't cocking. Yep.
That's
so
interesting.
It wasn't actually light. Yeah, so now, here's the thing. Before I fiddled with it, I was getting light primer strikes.
Okay.
So, now I'm not.
Falling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I fixed it. I stretched the firing pin. Mm-hmm. And I just used a standard, you know, everybody should have a standard firing pin stretcher in their toolbox. So I just used that.
That was my next question.
Yeah. And then... And then the firing pin is actually just a straight round, like it's, I don't know, a couple millimeters across. It's a big round firing pin, and it's not what you would traditionally see. Usually it's the end of a slot screwdriver. So it was just too much surface area, and it wasn't denting the rim enough. So I just filed it down so that it looks like a traditional firing pin now on a 22, and it darn near crushes the rim right in half. So
really, really strange, because Filthy had no issues with it.
That is interesting.
And then we get it, and it's weak primer strike in my gun, and all the airs I've had, same problem.
Yeah.
And then you tried it, and same problem.
Now, were you having any problems with it feeding?
No.
No? Okay, well, then you should be fine then. So, you know, now you won't get light primer strikes. You should be good to go.
Cool.
So when you come on over to pick up that spark, you can pick up that too.
So that's how it is. That's how it's going to be. I think you need to come over and make ammo.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. I should pick up some ammo from Owen when I'm down there. He's got my projectiles for 9mm.
Yeah, you get the projectiles, and you come on over here, and we'll sort everything out.
Yep. So anyway, the picture of the new rifle, well, the new rifle, the rifle with the new barrel on, it's now up on Facebook with a picture of my target that I shot today. And you'll see that it has kind of a fake aim point knockoff from Tasco. Trevor swapped me that for my spark that may or may not work. So I figured it was a good deal. but it seems to be working well. I mean,
I was told it worked.
The spark, yes, it does work.
If it doesn't,
probably.
I'll give it back to you, and you'll send it. Probably. Hey, dude, between us, we'll just keep sending it back to them until we get one that works.
There you go. That'll work.
Yep.
Anyway, that was me. I actually had a really good week this week, gun-wise. I had a lot of fun, and I'm glad everything's working really well. So, off to Trevor, I guess. If you're done, you know, buying.
I'm not,
things.
But I'll put my attention back to our show.
Good call.
All right. So, yeah, hunting, sort of. You and I, we went out and stuff. All I could say about that is they were new hunting grounds to me. And although we didn't see any game, I liked where we were.
It was cool out there. It was really neat. It was kind of in the middle of nowhere, all kinds of trails all over the place, roads and whatnot, and not a lot of people.
Some hardwood ridges.
Oh, yeah.
We would have saw some whitetails kicking around, but no, we didn't. It's like the somebody said on their last show. It was actually Zeke on Talking Lead. I thought the apocalypse happened.
All the animals are gone.
Yeah, there wasn't a bird, there wasn't a squirrel.
That being said, this was after one of the first snowfalls in the area, and I don't know what it is about snowfalls, but every time there's a snowfall, I don't see game for a couple of weeks. So I wonder if it changes their patterns or something.
maybe so.
If they hide for a couple of weeks, they don't know what this big white fluffy stuff is on the ground. I don't know. But, yeah, that could have been part of it.
Other than that, then you and I went and did some shooting. After we got your new barrel on, we went to the range, and I shot my STI upper and lower with the Stag barrel. And you shot your Franken gun with the SDI barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like our guns are cousins now, isn't it?
That'd be normal for around here.
No, blood brothers. Blood brothers.
Blood brothers. They're not blood brothers yet.
But they will be.
That's right.
Grease brothers.
What's that?
Grease brothers.
Yeah. Grease.
Brothers of the slipstream.
Yeah.
Well, hey, funny story. I've Trevor lubed up my gun with frog lube. And Jewel, we were downstairs watching TV, and Jewel was sniffing around, thinking,
"Get rid of it, Owen. It's no big deal."
She was trying to figure out what new candle we had lit, and it was the frog lube. So she really likes the smell of it.
If you do lube all your rifles with frog lube, and you put them in the safe, and you come back a couple of days later, you open the safe, and all you can smell is mint.
Yep.
Now that doesn't mean it's a superior product to Slipstream, Owen. It just means it smells good.
That's all it means. Although it is awfully slick.
Still not Slipstream.
No, it's not. Slipstream's still slicker, I think.
And nanoparticles gets into the
pores right.
and grooves of the metal and stuff. So
yeah.
I've been spending money on my True Bore without having shot a match with it yet, without even deciding if I'm going to stay in open, because that's what I do. And the first order I made was for an Aftec extractor from Double Tap Sports. He was one of the sponsors of the Canadian Nationals, has booth there and stuff. That's where I got all my Ghost and Double Alpha stuff for my Shadow, or not my Shadow, my STI Eagle gun. And of course, the STI Eagle having the same size frame as my True Bore, I can use the same Ghost holster, which is really cool. Anyway, I got this Aftec extractor, and the difference between the Aftec extractor and a standard, forgive me, 1911 extractor is, instead of it simply being spring steel that's bent in a certain way so that it becomes tuned, it has a cap and springs that are actually, there's two holes drilled into the extractor itself that fit inside the slide of the gun. And the two springs go in those holes, and then there's a cap that goes over top of those springs. And the spring tension is adjustable. Also, it talked about fitting it to the gun. If it is too tight in the firing pin block, you can open up the groove, or actually they want you to file your firing pin block. They don't want you to file the extractor. If you touch the extractor, you'll void your warranty. But it's okay to warranty to mess with the gun's warranty by filing the firing pin block. Anyway, it seemed to have the clearance they wanted. It was really hard to install. And then when I got it installed into the gun, the factory extractor fits flush at the back of the slide, but the aftermarket extractor protrudes a couple of thou from the back of the slide. As far as function goes, I don't know. I haven't fired it yet. As far as aesthetics goes, if you know how it's supposed to look, it kind of draws your eye to it because you know that it's not right. Does it matter? I don't know. I don't care what it looks like as long as it works right. But
that's not true.
It's a little true. I'm getting more into function than looks. But anyway, this extractor was big money. It was $140. And I expect if I pay $140 for an extractor, that not only is it going to function, it's going to fit right. And if it's extending past the back of the slide where a factory extractor would not, a factory extractor would be flush with the back of the slide, then the extractor I pay $140 for, well, gosh darn it, I want it to fit flush with the back of the slide as well. Unless there's a reason why it doesn't. If it's better for some reason, then tell me. And then I'll accept the fact that it doesn't fit flush with the back of the gun. But anyway, that's my that's what grinds my gears this week. So,
yeah. Well, that's fine.
Yeah. So let's move on then, because I've caused enough tears.
You've
upcoming events. T-shirt orders. We need four more shirts. So if one guy or one girl wants to order four shirts, we'll start asking for money, and Matthew will place the order with our official T-shirt provider, Wicked Cool Graphics. They don't know they're our official provider. We haven't told them yet, but it's the contract's in the mail. And so, yeah, we got a couple of more orders. We need four more shirts. And when we get those four shirts ordered, we're going to start asking you for money, and then we'll get you your shirts. Next is the charity shoot. That's our network charity shoot. Hopefully, we'll get as many of the Canadian podcasters there as possible. And if we're really lucky, we'll get some American podcasters there. This past week, Matthew and I, Owen Pustout, were on Politics and Guns, and they talked quite seriously about attending our charity shoot. And I think Toby Lee's going to defect like a Russian hockey player and join the Canucks up here in Canuckistan. So, Steve Lee, Canadian Podcasters, Rescue Gun Club, June 28th. Some shotgun, some small bore silhouette, some regular caliber rifles, and a mini IPSC match. And an acoustic concert featuring Steve Lee. So you really be there, be square type of thing. Later on in the summer, we're looking at having Tommy Nelson, Mag 40 instructor, host of the Gun Dudes, one of the hosts of the Gun Dudes, who's going to bring up his academy. He has Practical Armed Response Academy. It's a two-day shooting course. It's defensive style handgun. And at this point, the date is tentative. The dates, rather, are tentative, August 2nd and August 3rd. The first day will be instruction and time on the range. And the second day will be a mini match featuring some of the best stages from Rusty Goose Gun Club's 8th Summer Slam, 7th or 8th Summer Slam. That's a level 3 IPSC match. So that'll be pretty awesome. We also have an upcoming contest. The good news is we have the prize. The bad news is we don't know what the contest is going to be. Mike Rose has donated 4 packs of U.S. Night Vision mag wraps. They are wraps that will cover your full-length AR mags, like a P-Mag or a GI mag. And so if you want them, join the contest that we haven't told you about yet.
That's right. We will we'll figure that out soon, I hope. Maybe by next week even, because that would make sense to not drag this out.
Yeah, because, you know, well, maybe, I'm just throwing this out there, if the host of the show got together perhaps more than 30 seconds before recording the show to discuss
that's things, not going to change, I'm sorry.
I understand, I'm sorry.
Now, hey, the worst comes to worst, if this contest never actually comes to fruition, these will be handed out at the charity shoot, so they can be door prizes, or maybe we can make people do silly stuff for them, or something like that.
Yeah, stand on one leg. Maybe like rub your head, tap your belly.
Well, we don't want to really like challenge them too much. I mean, they're gun owners. Come on.
And they are.
And they listen to us.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, gentlemen, how about we jump into our main topic, which is our interview with Jason Filt, president of the Canadian National Shootings Clays Association, so we can hear a little bit about some guns that shoot scattershot and have, what's that fibrous material on the front?
No idea. It's not important.
Walnut? Something? Is it walnut? They make them out of walnut?
Could be.
Anyway, let's jump into the interview, and we'll be back shortly to close out the show. And by shortly, I mean like 38 minutes. All right, joining us now, we have special guest Jason Filt. Jason Filt is president of the Canadian National Sporting Clay Association, and a long-time friend of mine.
Long time, right?
Yeah. All the way back from April of last year when I went and mooched some chicken wings off him. But that's a story for another time. Jason, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So, Jason, you're the president of the Canadian National Sporting Clay Association. So we'd love to hear about the association, how it kind of spread from the Alberta Association to a national association. If you give some background there, tell us what you guys do. And also, we'd love to hear about the Worlds. The World Championships happened recently this past summer in Ontario. So maybe we'll touch on that a little bit as well. So why don't we start off with you telling us what the Canadian National Sporting Clays Association is and what they do.
Canadian National Sporting Clays Association is an association of shooters that get together and throw targets in the air and break them. We are members of two international bodies, the ICTSF, which is the English Sporting Clays, and FETASC, which is the European version shooting targets from hoops on the ground with your gun down versus from a shooting stand with your gun up. Two different styles of shooting the similar styles of target. They're clay targets. They're not trap or skeet. It's like cribbage and bridge, two different games using the same equipment, but definitely different games. The Canadian National Sporting Clays Association.
Wait. Hold on. Can I interrupt? Of course I can interrupt.
I always interrupt.
Can I?
Wait. So you're telling me that when you shoot those little things out of the air, those aren't skeets?
Yes.
This is a point of contention.
That doesn't make any sense at all. No, when I say I'm shooting skeets, that means I'm shooting those little clay things out of the air. I'd say right, skeet, Owen, but Owen's not going to acknowledge that I'm saying this.
Skeet is a specific game, Matthew, and it's a good game, but it's a different game.
Thank you for setting my co-host straight.
Whoa.
But if you want to know, hang on a second. There's a pretty interesting story about the origin of the word skeet and why we use it to describe clay target shooting.
Please, yes, I would love to hear this.
I'll make it short. So they had a contest to name the game when skeet was invented. It was invented in the States. And the word skeet is a Scandinavian word that means shoot. And it was the one that people think, we can spell that. Let's use it.
We can spell that. I love it.
Jason, sorry, that's a great lead-in to you taking a couple of minutes to describe the different types of shooting events involved in sporting clays. Now, we just made a little bit of fun about shooting skeet and shooting trap.
Yeah.
There's skeet and there's trap and there's field?
Feetask.
What's the one where you walk through the woods?
That's sporting clays.
That's English sporting clays. You can have separate games, and there's difference between the games and the sports. And the game will be in another 14 months, again, my primary focus, the game part, the fun part of it. The sport part's the organized sport, and what we do at the Canadian National Sporting Clays Association is help organize, help clubs run the sport, the English Sporting Clays and FITASC. Both have separate sets of rules that are predictable and consistent from club to club. Doesn't stop you from having four or five machines and throwing some birds in the air and knocking them out of the air with shotguns from 410 to 10 bore if you want to. But if you want the targets to be registered with our association to establish a national and a world ranking, then you pick your discipline, like you pick any other game you play, IDPA or some other gun game that you guys seem to think is fun. Sorry about that. You pick the discipline you choose to compete in and go with the rules for that event. The rules are similar but substantially different, including time limitations. And in FITASC, there's even a dress code that we have. When we're competing internationally, we have to follow. There's reasons for it that originate in Europe, and they're not that interesting, so I don't think we need to get into it now. But the walking through the woods with guns, shooting clay targets, that you're probably most familiar with is the English Sporting Clays game.
Okay. I was going to say that the most familiar one that I'm familiar with walking through the woods with guns is hunting, and that's all I do is just walk through the woods with guns.
So
you should try it where the birds are, Matthew. It's much, much more fun.
I'm going to try that next year, I think.
So again, that's funny. So let's back up a little bit again for anybody that's new to our show and new to firearms. We're talking here about a shotgun shooting sport and a shotgun shooting a type of ammunition that shoots shot into the air, which is a bunch of small pellets.
Yep.
And they're knocking clay pigeons, which is a small clay disc. About how big?
We have different sizes. The standard is, I'm going to go from memory, and I believe it's 110 millimeters across. A midi target is 90 millimeters across. And depending on the brand, a mini is 45 or 50 millimeters across. And I hope the gun dudes are listening and they're still looking up on their calculator how to make that in inches.
Nice.
those are the standards. Now, we also have rabbit targets that bounce on the ground. They're a harder edged rim target. They're thick, they're hard.
I assume is so that they don't break as they bounce across the ground.
As much.
Okay.
they still do occasionally.
Okay.
And we also have a Batu target, which is a very, very thin target. It's, if you've seen a clay target, you see there's a standard edge that I'm going to tell you is about a centimeter tall, and then the dome. The Batu target is basically almost a flat disc. It does have a little bit of a dome to it, but it's roughly half the thickness of that edge on your standard target.
Does that make it fly faster?
Yes and no. It flies when they come off the machine, you get to see the edge of it. Very, very hard to see the edge of that target until it turns, and as it slows down in the air, it will turn knife edge and then fall to the ground.
Oh wow!
It's more of a it's definitely a concentration game to shoot those targets, because they're technically difficult because they do multiple different things in the air depending on where in the flight path you shoot them. You really don't ever want to shoot them the first time against kids, young shooters, because young eyes and quick reflexes can see the knife edge and break it while you're still looking for it. And I'm not that old. Like, I think I'm a little bit older than Trevor, which is not really that old, is it, Trevor?
Well, I am the oldest on the show. We'll leave it at that.
Okay, perfect. Excellent. So, yeah, you and I don't want to shoot against kids on those targets there, unless you got much better eyesight than I do. They're not impossible. There's a method to shoot them, and if you have the right technique, they get easier the more you practice.
Imagine. Okay. So we're shooting shotguns, and we're shooting round, disc-shaped things made out of clay.
Yep.
And then there's a couple of different shotgun games where you shoot at these clays. There's sporting clays, English sporting clays, where you're in the woods and the targets come out from different positions, different distances, different locations, and you kind of walk a trail through the woods.
Yep.
And then now tell me the difference between trap and skeet.
Well, I'm not I shoot those games for recreation. I'm not competitive in either one. But if you imagine the palm of your hand, now this is a really rudimentary explanation, the palm of your hand flat on the table. You see four fingers in your thumb, make them equidistant apart, roughly about a 70-degree spread between your little finger and your thumb. Those are your shooting lanes.
Okay.
Okay. So. Now that's one. And now those lanes go from 16 to 28 yards, 26 yards. I forget exactly far.
So and then hold on now. I'm standing out in the middle of a field, and I'm on one of these lanes.
Yes.
How many lanes are there?
Five.
Five lanes.
Five lanes.
Spread apart, and I can stand up close to my targets, or I can stand far from my targets.
Depending on your ranking, they handicap it, or the shooter's sometimes handicapped, sometimes the game is handicapped by distance.
So if I'm a newbie, I'm going to start up close.
You shoot, well, up close is 16 yards behind the trap machine, which throws the target outward on angles that are I'm going to tell you 90 degrees from edge to edge, and I hope I'm close because I'm not exactly sure the technical rules of trap.
Right. Well, for somebody who's totally new, that's good enough.
That's good enough. The elevation, you're rising, I think it's a 50-degree angle or thereabouts, but the target speed is determined by the distance that it flies. There's a prescribed distance the target has to fly before it hits the ground on the plane where they come launched out at.
And this is the one where I yell pull, right? And buddy,
we call pull in all of them, actually.
Oh, okay.
Unless you're overseas, and then it's tire, which is French for pull, but you guys know that stuff.
Well, I thought today was French for shoot.
Same thing.
Shoot and pull mean the same thing in French?
It's crazy, I know.
Oh my God, okay.
So I yell tire, and then what happens? Somebody shoots at me?
The target flies out. I believe, and it's depending on your wind speed and such, but your target's roughly 60 kilometers an hour. And you have to shoot that, and it goes,
like I said, faster than my first car.
I heard you talking about that on the politics and guns. Your Jeep wasn't very healthy anymore, but that's okay.
Indeed.
Okay, so that's trap, and you shoot five targets from each of the positions, and you rotate through each position with five other shooters on your squad. It's the least expensive of all the clay target games because the equipment is there's the least amount of equipment. We just bought a new machine for our fishing game association, and it's one of the best you can get to shoot trap or trap doubles where the two targets come out at the same time, and it was a $10,000 machine. That's as cheap as it gets for competitive machines.
It's okay? To run now.
Yeah, exactly. Skeet is an arc, and I can't remember the distance between the two houses, and they shoot the targets. There's a semicircle with eight shooting positions in it, so one in the middle, one on either side beside the target-throwing houses, and then a semicircle with stations. One is as you're facing out toward, like downrange, one on your left-hand side, two, three, four in the middle, five, six, seven is your low house on your right-hand side, eight right in the very, very middle of the field. And you have to shoot those targets as singles and pairs. You shoot the outgoing bird above your head first, and then the incoming bird as a single second, and then you shoot a pair. So you go single from each station, and then a pair from the first station. The second station, you shoot a single from each house, and then a pair. From station three, four, and five, you shoot singles from each house, and then on stations six and seven, you shoot singles and pairs again like you did on one and two. And then on station eight, where you're standing in the middle, now bearing in mind this target is traveling roughly 60 to 65 kilometers an hour, you have to shoot that target as an incomer before it crosses the center peg.
So it's literally coming right at you, like Matthew's rabbit a few weeks ago.
You're not going to get hit by the target if you don't break it.
Oh, well, that's
really way less fun
to the game.
Although my
I could see a guy sitting there with a shotgun and a hockey helmet. Now that
this could be interesting.
Yeah.
The first time in my shooting career that I ever hit all the targets at a shooting stand in a registered event was incoming targets, and the way the wind was blowing, you did have to move if you didn't break the target, or so, if you happened to break it late, you had to move out of the way for the pieces.
Is this good apocalypse practice here, where they're coming right at you?
Well, how fast are zombies, man?
That's not 60 kilometers an hour. That's true. But I'm thinking if you could nail
World
it,
War Z.
They were moving way too fast. Like I've said, if that's how it's going to be, I don't want to play. But if these clay targets are coming at you at 60 clicks and you can hit them with a shotgun, then I got to think you're ready for the apocalypse. Am I right?
Well, hang on a second. Those are your entry-level sports. That's your trap and skeet.
Oh, entry-level. What happens at the Olympics?
In Olympics, it's much different. You go from kilometers an hour to miles an hour. Your targets are roughly 65 miles an hour. And you shoot with your gun. For trap, you shoot pre-mounted. But when you shoot international or ISSF or Olympic skeet, your gun stock actually rests on your hip bone before you can see it. You can't move your gun from with the gun basically on your hip bone. There's a mark on your vest, but it's down there. Your barrels are pointed roughly where you need them to be, and you can't move your gun until you see the bird.
Is that to kind of simulate like a hunting where you're caught by surprise and you got to get the gun up? You're not expecting the
yes, bird. Because they have up to a 3-second delay from the time you call for the bird to let it. It's a variable 3-second delay. Like it's right. Not 3 seconds. Anytime within 3 seconds, the target can come.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to use broad generalization. It's kind of like where your IPSC used to be a practical shooting sport.
Yeah.
And now it's a shooting game for competition.
Yeah.
It's part of the game. It's what makes it more difficult. And that's a rule that we share, not quite at the hip. There's a line on your vest that's below your shoulder for the feet task and international sporting clays as well. So you do have to shoot gun down for that as well. And it's part of the sport. It's the English sporting clays allows you to have a pre-mounted gun. It never used to. The rule was changed to accommodate the fact that we couldn't police or enforce the rule, and not everybody playing the game, not everybody competing in the sport was playing the game as a gentleman. How's that?
I got you. Yeah, it's every sport is like that. That's why we have penalties in hockey. So, okay, we know about the game a little bit. Now, talk real briefly about the types of shotguns. The last description you gave me made me think I need a semi-auto with an X-rail on the front that's going to hold like 40 or 50 rounds of shotgun ammo. But I see guys using over and unders or side-by-sides. What's the most common gun that people use, or common shotgun rather, that people use to shoot these games?
Locally, the most common are Browning, Satori's, over and unders. And the reason that's the most common...
In what gauge?
Normally 12.
But there's
not a Bakel or Bakel. What was it again, Trevor?
It's Bakel.
It's up to you. We had a gentleman who used to shoot quite regularly, well into his 80s, by the name of Wally. And Wally shot an 870 Wingmaster that he bought brand new, roughly 1935.
Attaboy.
And, wow. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but he could shoot that pump as fast as anybody that I've ever seen shoot a 391 Beretta. Like, he was functional. I never grew up shooting a shotgun. I started into the sport quite late in life, and I had a old Frankie 500 with an extra full goose, full choke for geese that I shot until I wore out the action bars, had them welded, and shot it until I broke it a second time. And that gun cost me $265. It's functional and it works. As long as it cycles reliably, can cycle a light load, because we shoot for FETASC, you're limited to your 28 gram loads. In sporting clays, you're limited to an ounce and an eighth, and there's your English and your metric and your imperial being combined. it's good that way.
Will I ever need more than access to two rounds at a time in the gun?
In a registered competition, the answer is no.
Okay.
Fun shoot just to play with your brain. Okay. We often throw a poison bird presentation, or a three bird shoot, or a two man shoot. So a poison bird, we throw three birds of two different colors, two of one color and a third bird of a different color. And they're throwing similar pattern in a similar flight path. And if you break the poison colored bird, the odd colored bird, then you score zero. Your job is to break the other two and let the other one get away.
Wow.
In a three bird pump.
They have penalty targets, Matthew.
Nice. I liked it.
Now, that's for fun shoots. We don't do that in our registered competition, although, pardon me, we do it in registered competition. We don't do it past the club level. Like, you won't see that in a provincial or national or international competition. But we certainly do it in our club level shoots that are scored. We also have for fun shoots a two man shoot. So you have two shooters, each with two shells, because you're never allowed to load more than two, except in these special occasion shoots. So the guys with semi-automatics. So there's two shooters, and there's three or four birds into the air, and you can load two or three shells depending on what the local course says. So yes, you may occasionally load three. For registered competition, if you only have two and you do it right, that's all you need.
Excellent. Okay, so I understand that Canada hosted a world championship in the shotgun shooting sports this past summer. What can you tell us about that?
It's a lot of work. 2 years prior to the event, Doug Harvey went to, I think it was Wales, where the ICTSF had their annual general meeting and said, look, we've got a new national shooting organization in Canada. Up until that point, Alberta had an association. BC has had one off and on. They just started another new one to try and grow the sport. Ontario, Quebec, the Maritimes have had associations and shooting clubs very, very active. Some as an organized sport, some as, hey, let's throw targets in here and knock them out. All of them, it's all good. We in Alberta had such a strong association that our neighboring provinces, BC and Saskatchewan, tried to join in. The fact that we had out-of-province members threatened our provincial standing as a provincial shooting organization. So we created a national organization, got buy-in from Quebec, Ontario, PEI. We do have some people in New Brunswick shooting, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, BC. We haven't got the territories, but I'm not sure there's any sporting clay facilities up there yet. Got buy-in, said, this is what we're looking at doing. They said, what's it cost? I said, well, just what you shoot. If you join, it's $25 for a lifetime membership, a $20 a year annual upkeep fee, maintenance fee for the website and our shooting catalog, which tells you where the shoots are, maps on how to get there, the rule book for the sport. You get a new one of those each and every year. Here's a plug. If you want to put your advertising in there, anybody listening, please don't hesitate to contact the CNSCA website. And we'll get your advertisement in there. So if you're having a sporting clay shoot, whether or not you choose to register with the Canadian Association, if it's a fun shoot or a club shoot, if you are shooting sporting clay targets, we're trying to have a central location where you can find out where everybody throwing sporting clay targets in Canada is throwing them and when.
So let me ask a quick question. Is it safe to say that if Alberta had not stepped up and formed a national association, we would not have been able to host a world championship?
Well, I want to make sure that everybody across Canada knows this new association, the Canadian National Association, is open to everybody. The fact that the people who got it off the ground live all around Calgary is because we weren't going to wait anymore for somebody else to do it. That's it. It's not. It's only based here because we live here. Like I said, our big world competition was in Galt. Our upcoming national FITAS shoot is in Galt at the Cambridge at the Galt Sportsman's Club. The impetus for the association, the credit, and all of the startup stuff is Doug Harvey. He's a well-respected shotgunner. He's originally from Manitoba, has made Alberta his home for as long as I've known him. Just a wonderful. He's a world-class coach, I would say, and he's the guy that got me started in the sport and kept me going. So he's the one that got the National Association formed and made the journey to Wales to get the shoot. So without a National Association, you can't enter the world shooting for organizations, FITAS and ICTSF.
You mentioned the word coach, and I've been involved in high-level coaching in the sport of archery for a while now.
And he can't quit either. Every time I say anything, he's like, well, Matthew, did you focus on the fundamentals, or were you trying to – was it a goal-oriented goal or
– outcome-oriented or process-oriented?
Anyway, there you go.
is the Canadian Sport and Clays Association – recognized by Sport Canada and receiving any funding, if it's
it's not Olympic sport, so at this point we are not eligible for Sport Canada funding.
It all comes from
the shooters' pockets and our sponsors.
That's too bad, because I mean, as soon as you're a Canada Games sport or a Olympic sport, and you get tapped into Sport Canada and the long-term athlete development model, there's funding there.
We get some of that in the Alberta Sporting Clays Association. Now, I happened to, at one time, wear both president of Alberta and president of Canada hats. I'm now no longer Carl Brewster, is now our president of Alberta. We do get some of that funding for our Alberta shooters, and that's the impetus behind BC starting their Sporting Clays Association. Saskatchewan and Manitoba are in the fledgling process of getting people organized, and you don't need that many members to get into that.
No, let me tell you, the key to provincial and federal sponsorship dollars are kids programs and coaching programs. If you have a registered coaching program where coaches get certified and trained and can progress through the levels, especially those levels described in the long-term athlete development model from Sport Canada, then the dollars flow.
The issue that we have with that, and it's the shooting dollars go to the Olympic sports from the federal government.
Yep.
In Alberta, we are part of the Alberta Association is part of the Alberta Federation of Shooting Sports. We are currently working through that model, and due to there was very, very interesting when everybody was expecting a big cut when we had a premier that cut everything. The oil patch slowed down, the tax dollars weren't there. We were expecting to get our funding cut substantially. Because we had joined that LTAD, long-term athletic development model, we had and the very important part is they wanted sport for life to be part of what we do. Because our uptake starts, there's very few people that are able to compete in our sport that are less than a teenager. There's some big 8-year-old kids that are pretty strong, but they're not normally able to maintain a 200 bird event and stay competitive.
No, yeah, Jen, Canada Games age kids are usually 12 and up, 12 to 21 in some sports. So
we get at 13, if we have some 13 to 16-year-old shooters that can shoot the lights out, but we're also lucky enough that we have some 80-year-old plus shooters, and we have a substantial amount of 70-year-old plus shooters.
Yeah, which is
your sport for life,
exactly.
Which means we had the long in they actually changed the wording because one of the things they stressed to us is we had to make a decision before they became a teenager, are they recreational participants or competitive participants?
Yeah.
And they said, well, we don't get them before they're teenagers. But that's all at the provincial level at this time because it
well sounds like you're talking the lingo. But we should move off of the top of the coaching and get back to the worlds, because we are running long on this segment, and we'd love to hear about the association's involvement in getting the worlds here and what it entailed, how many countries, how many participants, et cetera. Go.
Well, let's go for the easy numbers real fast.
Awesome.
The countries that were represented as members of the ICTSF were England, Australia, Canada, Ireland, Wales, and South Africa. We also had Canal Zone registered, which is the Panama area. Now, I understand the gentleman who shot from the Canal Zone actually lives mostly in Toronto, but he maintains a passport from down there. We had South Africa was here, Northern Ireland. We had Northern Ireland and Ireland at the same shooting competition. Very interesting. The Americans came, of course, because Galt is quite close to the American border, and people from that part of Ontario crossed the border lots for their sporting clays. So we had 271 shooters in our main event. We had roughly 500 entrants into the event.
I just need to say real quickly,
yes,
that we had more people at the Canadian IPSC Nationals than you had at the World Shotgun Championship. So just saying, just throwing it out there, carry on.
That's that game that's almost as good as IDPA.
Whatever, dude.
Not fair. And then we had seven provinces represented for sure. Now, the reason I said for sure is that the registration for these events is big, and lots of people just said, I'm Canadian and I'm good. I know that there were two people registered from Quebec that live just down the road from me, so I know they're not from Quebec. But we had BC, Alberta, 34 came made the trip from Alberta. We had at least a couple from Saskatchewan, over 100 from Ontario, 22 from Quebec, 5 from Nova Scotia, 7 from New Brunswick.
Yep.
Close enough.
That's how we say it.
Yeah, New Brunswick.
New Brunswick. We had 7 from New Brunswick. So we had 7 out of the 10 provinces represented. I believe there was somebody there from the Northwest Territories, but there's lots of guys who live in Edmonton that work up there, so I'm not sure exactly what is actually home for them. So, there was 271 entrants in the main event. We had 170 Canadian entrants. Some of those are the same people entering multiple events. Over 100,000 targets in the air, probably close to 150,000 if you count the practice trap and all the show pairs and stuff. So really, really, really happy with the attendance for it. Big event. They did a great job of hosting it at the Galt Sportsman's Club. Everything in the field was fantastic. They built us a whole new range, carved it right out of the bush. The president of their, or the director for their shotgun sports, has a construction company, and his staff and his equipment were there when they should have been making money for the company, and they did a really good job there. They're also the host for this year's National FITAS competition, which is going to be a Grand Prix. A Grand Prix in the FITAS world is an official event. It will give you standing for the world events, for the FITAS, which is no short shorts and collars on the shirts and the guns down, and you stand in a hoop, and lots of rules and really challenging targets. It is my favorite of the shotgun sports. It's not as popular or as common, mostly because it's a European game designed where real estate costs more than target throwing machines. Here we get to buy acres for less than we pay for target throwing machines. So we tend to have lots of acres and the machines spread out. FITASC is a much more compact game, takes less real estate, but there's more target machines. So it's pretty exciting, and that's going to be held the August long weekend of this year. It will be, it's a Grand Prix. So anybody that wants to shoot for their provincial team, contact your local your provincial CNSCA rep. His name and contact details will be on the CNSCA.ca website. And also our nationals for English sporting are going to be held in Hanley, Saskatchewan, which is between Regina and Saskatoon, at the Hanley Shooting Grounds. And that's the weekend of July 12th and 13th. So we're going to be selecting for the national teams. If you have interest in representing Canada internationally, we have recently just changed the qualification to be a representative for national team. It was a little bit tough for our Eastern shooters because there weren't that many events held in Eastern Canada that were registered events. So what you can do now, provided it's a event and you can advertise your sporting clays event on our website for free, it qualifies. You register your event, advertise your event. It can be invitational. It doesn't have to be open to the public, but it does have to be advertised. And you have to be a member in good standing of the National Association, which is $25 for a lifetime member and a $20 annual fee. And send us in your 2 cents a target for your registration fees. And that will get all your targets registered on the national database. And then when it comes time to pick a national team, if you're able to go and you have a shooting percentage that gives you a reasonable chance of success, either you contact us or we contact you or both, and you can represent Canada at the national and international level.
Very cool. Well, one last question before we have to let you go.
Yep.
Which country was the most successful this year at the Worlds?
Well, we were. We collected the fees.
Excellent. No. That's an answer I can end this segment with.
No.
But if somebody wants to see the results, where would they find them?
Actually, the results from that shooter are on the WinScore website. It's they were posted as part of our new section in our Canadian website, which is going under constant change and upgrade. And if anybody wants to volunteer to make that website better, it knows lots about making websites. Obviously, the people that, because we don't have a whole ton of funding, it's all sponsored by our shooters, our members, and our advertisers. That's one of the things we're always looking for more help to volunteer with becoming a trained and qualified referee. You mentioned coaching. Actually, Canada has one of the world's top ranked referees for sporting clays in both FITASC and English sporting. And he lives in or near Winnipeg. His name's Stan Orr, a great little guy. And he travels to all of our big events and trains referees so that local volunteers can be internationally certified referees. If perchance they go traveling, they can do that and get paid for it in international events. It's part of the recognition that you get through the national association we've devised so far.
Very cool. Well, Jason, on behalf of Slamfire Radio and our listeners, I'd love to thank you for coming on tonight. And it's our first shotgun episode, and I think it was pretty awesome. It's not every day we get to speak to a president of a national association, so we're very grateful that you were able to fit
Trevor,
us in.
You can speak to me any day. You know, you've got the number.
I can. Actually, I texted you tonight. I appreciate that. But, no, thank you for coming on, Jay, and taking time out of your busy schedule to speak to the Slamfire Radio listeners. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate the time to sing the gospel of sporting clays. You should really try it, man. Your targets just sit there.
No, I have.
How hard can it be? I
have tried it. I have tried it.
And?
And I bought an open gun for Ipsic.
Hey, that's that nice 1911 with the fancy grips, right?
Oh, we're done here. Thanks for listening, folks. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Thanks for having me, and it was a great time.
Awesome. Thanks, Jay.
No problem.
See you later.
All right, we're back once again. Big thank you to Jason Philp for taking time out of his busy schedule to slum it, if you will, and hang out with a couple or three Ipsic shooters. And educate us on some scattergun stuff. It's pretty interesting. I still don't want to do it, but I still appreciate hearing about it.
Cool.
Thoughts on
all right.
that, gentlemen? Matthew, well, Matthew, you're quite the clay shooter. Well, what do I call it now?
Skeet. Call him Skeet. I shoot Skeet.
You don't shoot Skeet.
I buy a box of Skeet and go out in the woods and shoot them.
Okay, you and I have shot trap.
Yes, we have.
And there are guys out there with their fancy guns.
Yep.
You're out there with your $89 knockoff Mossberg.
Knockoff Mossberg, even. It's really a Mossberg. Come on, it's not
a
Maverick.
It's Stevens, but a Maverick. It's a Maverick. Let's face it, it's a Maverick. The point is, it's got a 20-inch barrel. It's black, and all the boys are out there with their fancy wood guns, and you're not going to moat just as easily as they are. Is that because you're getting them right out of the box, or what's going on?
I think it's because I have shot a lot of them, and I like doing it.
It's dumb luck. It's dumb luck.
I have to admit, last year at the charity shoot, no, not this past summer, the year before, when it was in Restigouche, I did a little bit of that for the very first time. I mean, I've always shot what we call skeet around here, but it's really, you know, kind of backyard clay, right?
Bush trap, I think they call it.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know, you're kind of chucking them out there and shooting them. And
is that the same as being trapped in the bush?
Close enough.
All right.
And so, I shoot ducks and geese, and I consider myself to be a competent shotgun shot. And I was put very much to shame on that course when I tried that, and I could not hit a thing.
It's different than shooting stuff, like shooting birds. It's different than backyard trap. It's a challenging sport. I've shot it not a fair bit, but more than you two, I guess. In Edmonton, they used to have a regular day.
I tried it that once. Yeah. I tried it that once, and I'm pretty sure I will never try it again.
Yeah, it's fun. I don't mind doing it. The guys at the club always laugh at me too with my short gun, and then I go out and I shoot, 23 or 24 out of 25, and they go, "Oh," See, for me, it's just I've been shooting short shotguns my whole life. I don't like long shotguns, so for me, it's what's natural. It's what I like to do. And you know, barrel length has nothing to do with your spread, your pattern. Has everything to do with how your gun swings. And I like a shorter gun. It swings better for me. But you know, it is definitely a little bit harder to aim because you don't aim them, you point them, and obviously a longer stick is easier to point than a shorter stick, but, you know, it works for me, and I have fun doing it, so... You're funny. Anyway, so yeah, I don't know how to answer you, Trevor. I'm just a freak of nature, I guess. That's what you guys always keep telling me, so we'll just go with that.
Yeah, that,
I will
right.
argue that point.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, very good. Cool.
So all listener right. feedback, then.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, this first one's from Mark in Ohio. Hello, guys. I'd be interested in a triple XL shirt.
Done.
Thanks, Mark. Moving on to the next email. I'm just kidding. He writes a lot more here. He says, since we can carry firearms in Ohio, the triple extra fat shirts help hide my concealed weapons. Maybe my buying of a shirt can help you guys get a Second Amendment. That's pretty much it. Mark, we're basically waiting for more Americans to buy our shirts, and the Canadian government said, yep, you can have the Second Amendment. Well, not
I'm sure
quite.
The American government said, yeah, give them the Second Amendment.
Save us the headache.
Yeah. He continues on, my wife and I carry concealed sidearms daily. I'd love to see our northern brothers have the same ability. I guess your chances are better than New Jersey's. I enjoy your humor. Politics and Guns mentioned your show, and I've been tuned into you ever since.
Thank
Matt,
you
should come. What's that?
I said thank you to Paul and Toby and the rest of them.
Of course. Matt should come to Ohio so we can show him how to find deer and rabbit. The trick is to hunt where there is deer and rabbit. Oh. I see.
I like this.
Shooting a deer in Ohio is as difficult as breathing. Deer out here outweigh Trevor. My buddy comes from Elliott Lake, Ontario, to hunt with us. If he stays out of his Grand Mariner, I'm pretty sure it's Mariner, right? Not Mariner.
Yeah.
If he stays out of his Grand Mariner long enough to enter the woods, he usually shoots 3 to 4 deer in the week that he comes. He cracks me up.
Oh, you do that.
There's so many, they get more than one tag, I guess.
Yeah. Like in Georgia, a friend of mine lived in Georgia and now in Missouri, I believe. And in Georgia, where he lived, they had your tag that, well, you can buy multiple tags, but your license was good for 10 does and $1.
Holy God, that's a lot of meat.
The other place that he lived, you were allowed $1 and 1 doe for every day of the season.
Cool, kind of like turkey hunting in Ontario. Get one every other day. Yeah.
Now there's, so. I mean, they're deer are only about the size of large dogs, but
kind of like Graham and Ann, New Brunswick.
Yeah. Anyway, he continues on. He says, he cracks me up. This is talking about his friend from Ontario again. He cracks me up when he says, the bush in Ohio eats you. We have huge bushes similar to rose bushes. They can be 2 meters high and cover acres of ground. It's called Multifloria rose. It's a lot like Devil's Club in British Columbia. Multifloria rose is just denser with larger thorns. The deer love to hide in it. It rips into your clothes and skin just like the stem of a rose. You guys would love it. Absolutely, sign me up. I'm coming over there to thrash around in the brush with you and get my hide ripped off me. Thanks for the invite, Mark.
Like being on the show.
What's that?
It'd be kind of like doing the show with you guys.
Oh, that's kind of true.
Only more gentle.
I've traveled to Elliott Lake in Ontario for vacation since childhood. I've deer and bear hunted in Ontario. I went on a fishing trip to Terrace, BC. What a diverse country you have. Now, if you can just change the public opinion on firearms and the laws. I think you guys represent the gun owner crowd in a positive light. Keep fighting the good fight. Man, I got sidetracked there. Can I get in a triple XL shirt? Mark in Ohio.
Star Rock.
He saw a rock.
Nice.
Cool. All right. So that sounds like a lot of fun hunting down there. And I would love to come down there and hunt deer because if they're that plentiful, then even I could probably get one, maybe. But that bush, I mean, we got to stay out of there. Man, I don't do well with thorns. I mean, that's just brutal.
Your sensitive skin, Matt, would just go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we live in the winter here, and we're always covered up, so we don't get our skin exposed to the elements and get toughened like these southern folks.
Yeah.
Because Ohio is so south, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Owen, you want to grab the next one?
Well, I guess I can if you don't mind listening to my nasally cold voice.
Dude, we know it'll be better for the listeners if you do it.
That's probably a lot of big words in this one, isn't there?
Probably. I just can't pronounce. I don't know what his name is.
Man, I can't find the copy of my pal.
Ross Michael Alexander.
Okay.
I think. I don't know. He says, "Hello, gentlemen. You guys truly are the A team." A spelled E-H.
Yeah.
Of the firearms podcast world.
I got to jump in here. When I was playing paintball, we called ourselves the A-Team. And because we were Canadian, of course, we spelled it the E-H team. And we went to this shoot in Michigan. And they were calling it all the different team names. They're like, oh, and from Canada, we have the A-Team. We're like, that's pronounced A. He says, in America, E-H is pronounced A.
It's show.
And, uh-huh. And that was that.
Tell me about it.
He says the $60 has been withdrawn from my account, so it won't be long before I have my PAL making an appearance in my mailbox. Mind you, I must say I think Canadian lawmakers in Canada are cut from the same cloth that Canadian mayors are cut from, because when you look at the gun laws in Canada, the thought of a couple of white shoe boys on crack with a box of crayons comes to mind.
That's funny.
To give you some fuel for your fire against any anti-gunners, let me tell you about the Ukraine. After the fall of the Soviet Union, Ukraine has not made any real firearms laws to speak of. You can own pretty much what you want. Now, this may sound crazy, but to put this into perspective, the legal age of consent is yes.
Are you old enough? Yes. Here you go. Have an AK.
With that being said, there are fewer firearm-related deaths for any reason than Canada. Thanks a bunch, gentlemen.
Wow, that says something right there, eh?
Yeah.
Eh?
Eh.
Eh.
Indeed.
Awesome. All right.
Where does that bring us to now?
That brings us to iTunes review. So, Trevor.
Oh, all right. I got it right here.
As a lead host, why don't you read us the best iTunes reviews?
Well, first of all, to Karas there, thank you for writing in. We're really hoping your PAL gets there soon. I know that was the longest 2 months of my life is when I sent off my application until it actually arrived.
Did time slow down? Somehow
time it did. I swear it did. It slowed right down and all the gun deals popped up while I was waiting. In fact, what I did was I actually went and bought a gun before I had my PAL, and no, I didn't break any laws because the firearms store that I bought it in just simply held on to the firearm for me. I gave them the money, they put the gun in the back, and then when my PAL came in, I went and picked it up. But I'd go into the store every couple of days and say, can I see my gun again?
What?
And they'd bring it out and I'd play with it for a couple of minutes. I'd give it back and I'd hang my head and walk out the door.
What gun was it?
It was a Winchester 1300 Defender.
Oh, man, you don't have it anymore.
I know. It was a cool gun, too. It was an 18.5-inch barrel or 18-inch barrel, and I had it threaded for choke tubes. I put a great big extended extra full ported turkey choke in it, and that's what I killed those two turkeys with one shot with that gun. It was a cool gun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, this 5-star review on our the American iTunes feed, it comes to us from Dead Liver, and I gotta tell you, I like that name, Dead Liver.
And, must be somebody who drinks a lot of moonshine.
Yeah. It says good stuff. Trevor, Owen, and Matthew have great chemistry. I can't say
I made the list.
That doesn't happen often.
Finally, it took someone named Dead Liver to do it, but whatever. I'll take it.
The one show he listened to, he happened to actually catch you on it.
Yeah.
I can't say that I walk away from each episode having learned something useful.
Oh, never mind that.
And then in brackets he says, I suspect that's because Trevor talks too much. But I always finish an episode in a better mood than I started in. Me too, buddy. A couple of suggestions. Number one. Matthew and Owen need to perform a post-anterior separation and realize that Trevor did not buy a 1911. he bought a great standard slash limited division gun that was inspired by the good things about the 1911 and then made more awesome, especially in jurisdictions where standard capacity magazines are permitted. Number two, I want to hear more about three gun competitions. Number three, girl. Number four, next time I want my invite to the IPSC Nationals more than 3 days before the match starts. Ooh, my bad. You know who I am. I use my wife's iTunes account. Your wife's iTunes account's name is Dead Liver?
Wow.
Dude, you married a keeper. Well, thank you very much, man. It was awesome. Great review. And, yeah, keep them coming, American listeners.
Absolutely. So what do you guys got for shout-outs?
I got nothing.
No shout-outs?
Nothing. No. Huh. Owen?
No, I do. I have a shout-out to, I'm going to say her name, Wanda, and my wife, Amy, who have both agreed to Tommy's training course.
Nice. Is that Dave's wife?
That's Dave's wife.
Nice.
You know what that brings us to?
11.
11. This one goes to 11. Actually, this one goes to 12. But now that Amy and Wanda are in and Mark Giroux sent in his request, we're now at 11. That means, listeners, if you want to get in on this Tommy course...
You're on a waiting list.
There's one spot left.
We'll take 12 is the limit?
We'll take 12. Anybody after 12 is on the waiting list.
Well, I wonder if I can talk Jewel into going now that Wanda and Amy are going. She'll be shooting my 22, but... I wonder if she would. I'll have to ask her.
Cool. Well,
she can always shoot my 22 as well.
I've got a better 22 than you do.
Yeah. Sure.
What? A 22.45? A Ruger 22.45 is not better than your GSG. Your 1911.
Oh, you have it. Okay, yeah. No, sorry. I was thinking that little...
No, I wouldn't make her shoot that Beretta. I mean, the Beretta's a lot of fun. And apparently the short barrels are in Canada now, so soon I'll be getting my 100...
Short barrel.
106 millimeters instead of 125 that it is now. But no, I'd let her shoot the 22.45, of course, because it's way more accurate.
All right. So, shout out to Wanda. Matthew, you got anything?
I'm trying to think.
Quickly. We're running out of time.
We really aren't. We've got we've got like 10 minutes left.
Oh. All right, let's go back and talk about some stuff.
Well, the shotgun stuff was fun. But that's all I got. I don't know what else to say about it. Shotgun, yeah, shout out to all the shotgun guys. Thanks for hanging in there. We know that accuracy really isn't your game, but... I mean, when you're shooting more than one pellet, I mean, come on.
Dude, I don't care what you say. If something's coming at your head at 60 miles an hour and you can hit it before it hits you... My hat is off to you, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they say that you just point a shotgun and pull the trigger. You do point it, but you do have to point it very precisely.
You got to point it in the right spot. Yes.
Yeah, the cone of death that you see in Hollywood does not exist with shotguns. I mean, you have to be very precise with them.
Yeah, I've seen you miss with a shotgun.
Absolutely, I missed with a shotgun at the three gun.
1993.
Back in 93, yeah. I missed one time. Turned out it was a blank, but whatever.
Whatever. And still the target fell over.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, even at the three gun this year, I put in a full choke thinking that you were going to leave the targets way back like you did the year before and everybody would have a hard time knocking them over. And you moved them up nice and close. And for me, it was like shooting a slug almost. I had to aim dead center of every target in order to hit it. If I was off even a little bit, my pattern was so tight that, I was missing targets. So, shotguns, they do need aiming.
Yeah, and I thought I'd fool you by not sticking all the targets up for you to shoot at.
Yeah, that was fun, too.
Yeah, reshoot, you're welcome.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but anyway, no, I don't have any other shout-outs. I'm sorry, that's it.
All right, well, in that case, then, to the listeners, be sure to join one or both of our National Firearms Association. That's the Canadian Shooting Sports Association. Stay tuned for an upcoming show with a member, somebody who kind of works for the association. and also joined the National Firearms Association, which I just renewed my membership. And before my membership card came in, my CSSA membership renewal arrived. So it's not as critical as not forgetting to let your PAL run out, but you know, it's nice that they send those reminders. Be sure to check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada. We've got our own little forum over there. So when we post shows, and by we, I mean Matthew.
Hey, you've done it before, once.
That one time at Bandcamp, yeah. You know, get on there and let us know you're listening. Give us some feedback. Like us on Facebook. We have killed, slaughtered, destroyed the library. We're now at 298 likes and counting.
And they're at?
Who cares?
Who cares? We're past them. Well, we might not be. What if they caught up? What if they did like some sort of, you know, run to kind of, you know, get back at us? I don't know. Jules like that.
To that, I say, who cares? We've got big news again this week. We announced it last week, but we're going to announce it again for the next couple of weeks just because we're really excited about this. We're now a member of the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, also known as WRVO Radio Network.
I think it's Viola, Reno Viola.
I'm pretty sure I said Viola.
You definitely did not say Viola.
Listen with
definitely
an accent.
Definitely not.
You listen with an accent, I said Viola.
Then again, I have not yet heard it said, so I still may be wrong on this.
It's Viola. Yeah. And they can be found at...
There's no such thing as a Viola.
It doesn't have to be a thing to be a name.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Fluelling. What's a Fluelling exactly?
It's a LARPer.
Actually, it's a king.
Oh.
It's a king?
I figured he would know that.
In the Llewellyns, so Fluelling is English for Llewellyn, and they were traditionally
the
kings.
History lesson you didn't ask for.
Yeah, but we need to eat up some time, so carry on.
Well, if you could let me get through what we need to get through, and then we could waste the listeners' time.
All right, all right.
So, the new network, which I'm so proud to be a member of, is at www.renoviola.
Viola.
Viola? Viola?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Viola outdoors.com. You can listen live to dozens of Canadian-based outdoor podcasts. From fishing to scuba diving to boating and now firearms, and also the politically incorrect redneck show is on there, and that's pretty cool. First show I listened to had Tony Bernardo on it from the CSSA. Spoiler alert.
Spoilers. Any Doctor Who fans will get that.
Yep. Oh, yeah, you had to work in Doctor Who.
that's for you, 9X. Wasn't that latest the newest episode awesome? Write in and tell me about how awesome the new Doctor Who episode was. Come on.
Christina could do that for you, too. She, like, for a week, I've been upstairs watching Sons of Anarchy, and she's been downstairs watching Doctor Who. Like,
yep.
No more marathons. It's ridiculous.
Well, no, it's all done now. Now we just have to wait for the regular episodes for the season to go through. No, all the marathons are done. Now we got to wait for the regular season to go through.
Oh, well, she told me it's still going, so I guess she's just avoiding me. Also, guys,
no, she probably just has more stuff taped in the PVR.
Yeah, that's it. Last time I went downstairs, the TV wasn't even on, but whatever. don't forget, we're also on the Crusader Podcast Network, which features a baker's dozen, quite literally a baker's dozen of great American and Canadian pro gun podcasts. Tons of great material on each. And
yeah, we're going to actually be having Reno, the owner of the Reno Viola Outdoors Network, on our show January 9th.
Oh, sweet.
So he's going to be on. We're going to interview him, talk to him about his network, and he'll talk to us about, well, his network, I guess. I don't know what else to say there. So we are looking forward to talking to him, though. So
yeah, and hopefully when he's done, he won't regret the decision.
Hopefully. And maybe we'll know how to pronounce his name.
He doesn't listen, does he? Clearly.
He might.
Well, no, I'm sure he doesn't, or we wouldn't be on there.
We're going to him as long as we can.
Yeah, it was a suggestion from one of his supposed friends. You really want to have these guys on.
Maybe his competition suggested that.
Maybe. They're trying to shut him down.
Yeah. Awesome. I cannot find the picture of my pal anywhere. I need to email the front and back of my pal to SFRC.
You could scan it again. or take another picture.
I've got it somewhere.
I take a picture with my phone and then just email it from my phone.
That works really? Too. If your phone focuses up close, that'd be great.
Yep.
See, that's why you're the smart one. Brilliant. Sorry, Matthew. I know you thought you were the smart one.
No, I never thought that. Are you kidding me? I've met myself. Every morning I wake up, look in the mirror, go, who the crap is that guy? Oh, yeah, it's me again.
No, I look at, he's back. I thought I ditched him yesterday.
The cat came back very next day. All right. Anyway, I think that's all we've got. So I'll just wrap up the rest of the time that we have with outtakes, because we've got some this week. So Trevor, close us out, would you?
Hi, and welcome to episode 33. I'm your host.
That no, the end, not the beginning.
Oh, the end. Goodbye. Yeah.
Last week's ending was awesome, by the way.
I don't remember. Were we?
You just said goodbye a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I only have so much creativity, and by so much, I mean very little.
Yeah. But, so, anyway.
No, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us for the past 33 episodes. And all I can say is there's a lot more useless information to come.
I like it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Stay safe out there.
See you later.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over,
it's time to get a gun. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Slamfire Radio for November 28th, 2013, episode 33 and a third. Oh, wait, none of the cast members murdered his wife.
What?
Can I say that?
What?
I think there's a reference there that we're missing there, Owen.
Naked Gun, 33 and a third.
Okay.
Stabby,
yeah.
Stabby, cut. No? Anybody? Hello? Is this thing on?
I didn't ever see that movie. I'm not sorry. No, I don't mind this at all. This is funny.
Well, I just accused OJ of murder, and he was found not guilty by a really competent team of LA prosecutors.
If you want to start again, you can.
If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Yeah,
no way. You're not letting him start again when you're going to throw me under the bus and not let me start again when I screw up.
I let you start again. I just tacked yours on at the end for an outtake.
I didn't screw
exactly.
Up. I didn't screw up. I just don't want to get sued.
Oh, crud. All right. Try that again then.
All right. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Slamfire Radio. Okay. For November 28th, 2013.
The creepy edition, apparently.
That was the Uncle Creepy version.
Uncle Creepy.
Uncle Creepy. All right, here we go. I needed this. All right. How do you say listeners in Spanish?
Hola. I have no idea how to say it in
Hola
Spanish.
Hola es listeners. Es a. No, okay. All right. On three. On 33. Hello, listener. No. I need a Mr. Rogers voice right now.
If I could sound really rude, who's Jason?
Oh, my God. Jason, you have to understand that these guys just show up.
Apparently the selection process to be a podcast host isn't very special.
Jason is the president of the Canadian National Sporting Clays Association, one of the guys who hosted me when I went out to Calgary last Easter for the gun show and the stick to your guns dinner.
I hosted. Trevor means bought him something to eat and then never saw him again until the dinner and then never saw him again and never got invited shooting or any of that fun stuff.
Right.
That's not but quite I've, how I remember it, but yeah, he did buy me some chicken wings.
And you got to watch me win a gun.
Yeah, rub it in. I tried to buy it from you too, but oh no.
I should have sold it.
Yeah, because it had plastic on it instead of wood. What did you want
it
for?
Not so much that. Is when I put on all my hunting gear, it has a non-adjustable stock, and I have little short arms and couldn't reach the trigger.
So like a Tyrannosaurus Rex kind of thing, then.
Yeah, you got the T-Rex arms.
Kind of, yeah.
So Trevor brain farts.
Big one.
That's my note.
He's got a strange name. He's like from the Czech Republic or something.
Slash a carve a leg off.
Yeah, slash a carve a leg off.